Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we're really digging into a huge historical moment, one that still shapes our world, the Russian Revolution.
That's right, and we're doing it through the lens of S.A. Smith's Definitive History. It's a fantastic book.
It really is. And we think Smith's work is kind of the perfect shortcut if you want to grasp how this colossal empire just vanished almost overnight.
And then rebuilt itself into something completely different. Yeah, something equally powerful, but also pretty terrifying in many ways.
So this isn't just about dates and battles. Our mission today is to unpack Smith's really nuanced take on it all.
Mm-hmm. We want to look at the social forces pushing things along, the huge impact of World War I, and that central kind of tragic puzzle.
Yeah, the paradox. How did this push for liberation end up where it did?
Exactly, and we're looking for lessons, right? What can the Tsar's fall teach us about, say, how fragile states can be, or the risks of deep political divides?
Things that still feel very, very relevant today. You see those patterns, don't you, when systems start to crumble, whether it's 1917 or now.
Definitely. Social breakdown, the rise of decisive leaders, often extreme ones. The echoes are there.
So who's our guide through this? S.A. Smith.
Right. He's a very distinguished British historian, professor at Oxford, specializing in modern Russian and also Chinese history.
And he's not just retelling the story. He spent years, decades even, deep in the archives. You feel that weight in his writing.
Absolutely. And I think what really makes his perspective stand out is his focus on what's called history from below.
Can you unpack that a bit? What does that mean in practice?
Well, instead of just focusing on Lenin's speeches or the Tsar's decrees, Smith really tries to piece together what the revolution felt like for ordinary people.
Like the factory workers, the peasants out in the villages, women.
Exactly. Their experiences, their hopes, their actions. He shows they weren't just swept along by events. They were driving them.
That feels crucial.
It is. And because he draws on so much research, he manages to avoid those old Cold War style arguments, you know?
Right.
Was it all good or all bad?
Right. That binary thinking.
Yeah. Smith holds both sides. He acknowledges the genuine achievements, things like big leaps in education, women's rights getting a huge push.
But also doesn't shy away from the awful parts. The descent into attrition.
Precisely. That balance is what makes it so valuable.
Okay, so let's get into his main argument. How does Smith see the revolution unfolding?
He frames it as this complex collision, really. Three main forces converging. First, you've got the really deep underlying problems within Tsarist Russia itself, just fundamentally flawed.
Okay, structural issues.
Right. Second, the catastrophe of World War I. That just threw gasoline on the fire.
The external shock.
Mm-hmm. And third, the engine driving it all. Mm. The powerful, sometimes chaotic dreams and demands of ordinary people wanting a totally different life.
And this setup leads straight to that core paradox you mentioned earlier.
Yes. How did this explosion of hope for, you know, total liberation, peace, land, equality, people ruling themselves, how did that ultimately produce a state built on secrets, control, and fear?
It's that journey from utopia to tyranny.
Yes.
Smith tracks it all the way from the earlier 1905 revolution.
Kind of a dress rehearsal, yeah.
Through World War I, kicking things off. Then the chaos of 1917 with its dual power.
Then the Bolshevik takeover, the incredibly brutal civil war that followed.
Right, 1918 to 21. And then the consolidation of the Soviet state into the early 1930s. It's a huge sweep.
To really get why it was so volatile, you have to understand just how shaky the foundations were. Smith calls Russia a superpower in crisis.
So politically, you had Nicholas II clinging to this really old-fashioned autocratic power, refusing to change.
Totally out of step. And economically, the sheer scale of poverty, especially among the peasants, was like a ticking time bomb.
Over 80% of the population were peasants, right?
Yeah.
And they were desperate for land, this land hunger Smith talks about.
Constantly. They were technically free after serfdom ended, but still dirt poor and clashing with the nobility over land.
Meanwhile, the government's trying to modernize fast, push industrialization.
Which creates another problem. Packing cities with this new working class. They're concentrated, they're militant, living in awful conditions.
And very open to revolutionary ideas.
Absolutely. So you've got this bizarre setup trying to run a modernizing economy with like a medieval political system and a deeply troubled agricultural base.
And then comes the match. World War I.
The great accelerator, as Smith puts it. It didn't cause the problems, but it made revolution totally inevitable. It just ripped open every single weakness.
And the scale of the disaster was immense. huge military defeats, millions of casualties.
7 million by 1917, yeah.
The economy collapses because agriculture and transport just break down under the strain of war.
But maybe the biggest blunder politically was the Tsar deciding to go lead the army at the front himself.
Leaving the capital in the hands of his wife, the Tsarina, who was deeply unpopular, and Rasputin.
Right. That single decision basically destroyed whatever credibility the monarchy had left. Public trust just evaporated.
Which brings us straight to 1917 and the February Revolution. What's striking in Smith's account is how leaderless it seemed at first.
Totally spontaneous. It kicked off on International Women's Day, female textile workers hitting the streets because there was no bread.
Just think about that. 3 centuries of Romanov rule starting to unravel because of protests over food shortages led by women.
The crucial moment, the real turning point, was when the soldiers in Petrograd, mostly peasants in uniform, tired of the war, were ordered to fire on the crowds.
And they refused.
They refused. They joined the protests. That was it. Game over for the Tsar.
Wow. So this power vacuum leads to that really unstable dual power phase.
Yeah. On one side, you've got the provisional government, liberals mostly trying to set up a proper democracy, but critically, they wanted to keep fighting the war.
And on the other side?
The Petrograd Soviet, representing the workers and soldiers, much more radical.
And this is where Smith points to the failure of that democratic alternative, right?
Mm-hmm.
The provisional government and even the moderate socialists like the Mensheviks, who initially led the Soviet, they just couldn't deliver.
They failed completely. Their biggest mistake, refusing to give the people what they were screaming for, peace, land, and bread.
Why wouldn't they?
That seems obvious.
Well, they believed in doing things properly, wait for an elected assembly to sort out land reform, negotiate peace formally. They were focused on legality.
But people were starving then. The war was happening then. They didn't have time for procedure.
Exactly. They totally missed the mood, missed the urgency.
And that created the perfect opening for the Bolsheviks.
Precisely. Now, Smith tackles that classic question. Was the October takeover a coup or a popular revolution?
And his answer is?
It's nuanced. He calls it a coup that rested on a larger social revolution.
Okay, break that down.
Well, it was a planned takeover. A minority group, highly organized, Trotsky playing a key role in the logistics.
But it only worked because their message, their simple, brutal slogans, end the war now, all power to the Soviets, land to the peasants, resonated so deeply with the exhausted, radicalized workers and soldiers.
So they tapped into that existing wave of popular anger that the moderates had failed to address.
They stepped right into the vacuum the moderates left behind.
Okay, but if the Bolsheviks were supposedly aligned with the people on October 17, how did things turn so dark so quickly? The Red Terror, the Chicha, it feels like such a betrayal.
Smith argues, and I think it's a powerful point, that the real transformation wasn't necessarily October itself, but the brutal experience of the Civil War that followed from 1918 to 1921.
Survival mode kicked in.
Totally. They were fighting for their lives against the white armies, foreign intervention. To win that war, they had to militarize everything, politics included.
Which meant things like war communism, forcing grain seizures from peasants.
Mass arrests, executions by the new secret police, the Cheka, the Red Terror. Violence became normal, a standard tool of government.
And power got sucked into the center. What happened to the Soviets, those workers' councils?
They were effectively hollowed out. The democratic participatory spirit of 1917, crushed by the demands of war and central control.
So the methods used to save the revolution ended up destroying its original ideals.
That's the tragic irony Smith points to. That period forged the authoritarian template for the next 70 years.
And after the Civil War, you get this really weird period in the 1920s, right? Full of contradictions.
Absolutely fascinating. On the one hand, economically, Lenin brings in the new economic policy, the NEP.
Which was basically a step back towards capitalism.
Kind of, yeah. A pragmatic retreat, allowing private trade, small businesses, letting peasants sell surplus grain, just to stop the economy completely collapsing after the war.
But at the same time, socially and culturally, there was this explosion of experimentation.
Incredible vibrancy. Simplified divorce laws, massive campaigns for women's equality, avant-garde art and theater trying to create a whole new socialist culture from scratch.
So economic compromise alongside social radicalism.
Yeah, but, and this is the crucial but, politically, the screws were tightening. Even as early as 1921, factions within the Communist Party itself were banned. Dissent wasn't tolerated.
Which leads to Smith's view on the whole Lenin-Stalin connection. Was Stalinism inevitable?
Smith says no, not inevitable. But, and it's a big but, The foundations for Stalinism were laid under Lenin specifically during the Civil War, meaning the key tools, the one-party state, the political police, the acceptance of mass terror as legitimate, those were already in place. Lenin built the machine.
And Stalin later used that machine for his own horrific purposes, the purges, collectivization.
Exactly. The instruments were ready and waiting.
Okay, let's pull back and look at some of the big themes Smith leaves us with. The first one, that history from below, popular agency.
Yeah, it's so important. It's a reminder that history isn't just made by great men, you know? It's driven by the actions, the demands, the desperation of millions of ordinary people.
The workers, peasants, soldiers, they were the real force. The Bolsheviks were just the ones who managed to ride that wave most effectively.
You could say that. They were incredibly good at channeling that raw energy.
Which ties into the next theme. Inevitability versus contingency. Was revolution bound to happen?
Well, Smith argues Russia had these deep long-term problems, yes. The autocracy, the land issue. But it was World War I, that specific contingent event that made the collapse unavoidable.
So it's not just one cause. It's the long-term rot meeting a short-term disaster.
Right. A crucial lesson for understanding any major historical shift, I think. Multiple causes intersecting.
And that links to the failure of the Democratic option, the moderates.
Definitely. Their indecisiveness, their sticking to procedure when the house was on fire, it created that power vacuum. People needed answers now.
And the Bolsheviks offered simple, decisive, if brutal, answers.
Peace. Land, bread, hard to argue with when you're starving and your family members are dying at the front.
Which brings us to the final, perhaps most sobering theme, that transformation of ideals, the dream of freedom twisting into tyranny.
It's the tragic heart of the story, isn't it? The huge gap between the aspirations of February 1917, that feeling of infinite possibility, and the reality of the Soviet state that emerged.
Revolutionary goals getting ground down by the realities of war and holding on to power.
It's a tough lesson. Smith really captures this tragedy in some powerful statements throughout the book.
Yeah, those quotes or core ideas really stick. Let's touch on a few. The first one really sums up the complexity. The Russian Revolution was both the culmination of Russia's historical development and a radical break with the past.
It acknowledges both things, right? It grew out of Russia's specific history, generations of issues.
But it also created something fundamentally new, completely different from what came before.
Exactly. Then there's the idea that revolution is not just about changing who holds power, but about transforming the very nature of power itself.
That goes deep. It wasn't just swapping the Tsar for Lenin. It was changing the whole idea of where authority comes from, what the state is,
yeah,
from divine right to the dictatorship of the proletariat, in theory.
A massive conceptual shift. And maybe the most poignant one, paraphrasing Smith's verdict. The tragedy was that it began with genuine popular aspirations for freedom and equality, but ended by creating new forms of oppression.
Oof, that captures the whole arc, doesn't it? From the hopeful crowds in February to the emergence of the Cheka and the gulags later on.
It really does. A heartbreaking trajectory.
So thinking about today, what are the real life applications? What can we actually learn from this? I see huge lessons about leadership in crisis.
Oh, absolutely. Just contrast the key figures. Nicholas II, weak, indecisive. Kerensky, the head of the provisional government, also fundamentally unable to make the tough calls.
Versus Lenin, ruthless, focused, absolutely clear on his goals.
Right. It shows that in moments of total chaos, decisiveness, even if it's morally questionable, often wins out over hesitation and complexity. If you don't offer a clear path, someone with a simpler, more extreme answer probably will.
And that ties straight into the danger of polarization, doesn't it? That dual power period is a stark warning.
Totally. When the political center, the moderates, fail to solve immediate gut-level crises like hunger, like war, the extremes gain traction. People lose faith in the middle ground.
The center cannot hold if people feel the system isn't working for them at a basic level.
And we see that playing out today in various ways, for sure. Another thing is the sheer power of narrative.
Yes. Peace, land, and bread.
So simple, so powerful, emotionally resonant. The Bolsheviks mastered it. Their slogans cut through all the complex constitutional debates the liberals were having.
It's a timeless lesson about communication, propaganda, how messages land, especially when people are desperate or afraid.
Vital for analyzing politics today, how narratives are constructed and consumed.
So final thoughts. For me, the biggest takeaway, the thing that really hit home from Smith's account, is just how fragile, seemingly permanent states can be. Russia was this ancient empire looked unshakable. But when those deep structural flaws met the sudden shock of World War I, the whole thing just disintegrated with shocking speed.
It's a humbling reminder. Never assume stability is permanent.
And for you, what's the key insight you take away?
I think for me, it's that vast, often tragic gap between intentions and outcomes. The journey from the idealism of the early Soviets, you know, people debating everything, imagining a new world, to the rigid authoritarian state that emerged just a few years later. It shows how revolutionary processes, especially violent ones, can take on a life of their own, often betraying their origins.
It forces you to look critically at all movements, doesn't it? Avoid easy labels.
Exactly. It highlights the complexity of historical change and why that kind of critical analysis is so important.
A powerful idea to leave us with.
Indeed.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.